1, 2, 3, car! I am alone. I am all by myself. I'm ranking the Beatles, and Julia's not here. That's right, friends. It's episode 112 of Ranking the Beatles. I am your host, Jonathan, and I am rolling solo only for the intro and outro of this episode. We usually record intros and outros separate from our conversation. And as I'm editing this episode, we just got back from a little quick jaunt over to Atlanta for a couple days. And when we came home, Julia is under the weather. She's got a little bit of a bug. So I'm doing this intro and the eventual outro on my own. But hey, everybody, hope you're all doing smashingly. If it's your first time here, I'm Jonathan. I am your captain on the ship here of the SS Ranking the Beatles. Welcome aboard. Hope everyone's doing well. When this episode drops tomorrow, y'all, it's a big week in Beatleland. A big, big week. The upcoming release of Now and Then, it's just a couple of days away. Maybe it's already out by the time you've heard this episode at some point in the future. But as it stands right now, we're just a couple days away, and I could not be more excited. The fact that it's 2023, and we're getting new music from a band that broke up 57 years ago, something like that. My math's really bad. What would that be? That'd be 50-something years ago. I don't know. Someone correct me in the comments. I'm terrible at math. But what a thrill that we get this new music after all these years, you know. And God, when did we get Free as a Bird and Real Love? 25 years ago, almost, like something like that. 26, 30. I don't know. Time is irrelevant, but holy smokes, guys, we've got all this new stuff coming out. New mixes of early songs that were thought to be unremixable. God, thank God for technology. This is going to be so cool. Can't wait to dive into that. Gonna probably drop an episode about that in a couple days. As soon as Now and Then comes out, keep an eye out. There may be a little something coming. But hope everyone's doing real well. We just got back from a couple days in Atlanta, Georgia. One of our favorite bands, The Marvelous Three, had a reunion this weekend for the first time since they broke up in 2001. If you're not familiar with The Marvelous Three, I could not recommend a band much higher than I recommend Marvelous Three. Butch Walker is the singer of that band. He's also a well-respected solo artist and highly in-demand producer. He's produced records recently from Weezer, Green Day, who else? He's done stuff with Taylor Swift. He's all over the place. Fallout Boy. He's all over the place. He's a highly in-demand, well-respected producer. And The Marvelous Three was his band he had in the 90s. They had a hit called Freak of the Week. And they have been a favorite of both Julia and I for years. So they announced a little reunion this weekend for the first time, and we jumped at the chance to go out there. And man, was it worth it. Just an absolute blast. So yeah, that's my recommendation for today. If you don't know Marvelous Three, go check it out. Anyway, unrelated to all that, we've got a good episode this week, y'all. An old friend of the show is back. I think it's his fourth time coming on here. And, you know, it's just so fun to talk to him. And for a song like this one, I really wanted to have somebody that I knew would bring the goods. So he always brings the goods. He's the one guy you go to for that kind of stuff. He is the host of Paul or Nothing, the only podcast to get all your McCartney all the time. He's also the host of the offshoot of that podcast, Macca in Your Attic, where he has guests on to discuss rare and cool McCartney and Beatles collectibles that they have. He's never had me on that show. I would like to go on that because we do have some cool stuff. A jerk needs to extend the invitation my way. Just kidding. Anyway, let's jump into it, y'all. Please welcome back to the show for the fourth time, the one and only Sam Wiles. Sam, welcome back to Ranking the Beatles, my friend. How are you doing? It's so lovely to see you. What's going on?
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me back. It feels like only yesterday we were talking about, what was it? What did we do last time? It was Not Guilty. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really flown by, and I'm so glad we have another fantastic song to talk about here today with my podcasting aunt and uncle. It's yes. always a pleasure.
It's good to see you. It's been a hot minute. Yeah, we were just in Boston. We connected with the Blotto Beatles fellas, and we sure talked about you like the whole time.
Pretty much, yeah.
We all just kind of like sang your praises and fluffed your ego, even though you weren't there.
No, like, you know, when Yoda feels all the Jedi killed in Star Wars, he grips his chest. Like, I did feel something in the air. I was like, no, something good is happening somewhere. Yeah.
Well, it's
so what? Is this like, is this like my fourth time on the show now?
I believe this might be number four. Oh, yeah. I think so. Like, it's
another notch on the bedpost.
Well, like, you know, I like having, and I'm sure everyone else feels the same way that has you on their shows, like, you're a fun, entertaining, good conversationalist. And I know when there's a song that is somewhat absurd and needs like the gentle touch of a real nerd like me, it's good to call you.
Right. That's why I was chosen. Because so like when I was last on Blotto Beatles, actually, I brought up the idea that I was being punished for having to talk about There's a Place. And I'm not saying that's the same here, but like I was wondering, like, did a proper guest like back out at the last minute or something? Am I filling in for someone here? Is this one of those songs that someone had to do?
No, as many times as you and I have rescheduled this conversation.
You didn't give this to Carl Gass, did you? You know,
Carl Gass is not up for this one, apparently. No one has picked this one. I've given it to, you know, I've offered it in a list to multiple people and nobody wants it. But I'm really eating shit here. I'm sorry. No, but I mean this in like, this is a song that it's fairly unknown to most non-hardcore Beatle fans. Like, this is like pretty damn obscure. And so like, you got to go to like the knowledge base, like the people that really know their shit, I think, on those kind of songs. I would not expect Kyle Gass to be like, you know what? Yeah, you know my name, look up the number. That's the one I want to talk about.
I got some really strong feelings about that song.
Yeah.
I'd like to come talk about it for an hour.
Yeah. So like, songs like this are the ones that I feel like are really good to have with like hardcore fans. Because you can either go, this song is totally stupid and I'll tell you why, or you'll think it's great. But no, this is not punishment. The only time I've ever really punished anybody on this show was when I had my bandmate Steven on here, who is like a hardcore guitar player, and made him talk about What's the New Mary Jane and Oblah Dee Oblah Ta. He was like, is this even a real song? Like, why are we doing this?
A song that is semi-related to what we're talking about here today. Though, you know what? I am just realizing now, I did a George song last time. I've done a John song this time. I will hopefully get back and talk about a Paul song eventually, folks.
No, we talked about a Paul song with you.
My shtick.
Hold on.
I know. At some point, I'm just saying the last few in a row.
Let me consult the list here. We talked with you about a Paul. I know we did. Let's see. Where are you, Sam Wiles?
I'm actually struggling to remember.
We did Maxwell's Silver Hammer, the most Paul of Paul songs with you.
I don't remember that. I think
we were all drunk.
It was seven years ago.
It was literally February of 2021.
Oh my God.
When we did this. Oh my God. Yeah.
How the time has flown. You had such long hair and bushy beard back then.
Oh, I was 25 then, and now somehow I'm 42 years old in that span of time.
You've caught up happened. With us. I don't know how it happened, but
yeah. My word.
But yeah, so
I was going to say, with this podcast, obviously, as it goes on, due to the format of the show, obviously, every episode, in theory, you like the song more and more. So, you know, at least I've always got that going for it. But speaking of the ranking, it is time for my biannual trashing of the rankings list. Boy, oh boy, am I as incensed as ever.
Let me make sure I've got it open here so I'm on the same page with you. Okay.
Yeah, so, well, this isn't all of them, but...
Now, last time we were here, we had you on for Not Guilty at 127, and now we're here at 104. So we've got 23 episodes since we last had you. Let me have it. What you got? Let's hear it.
I mean... You're placing You Know My Name, Look Up the Number above I've Got a Feeling, I Need You, Lovely Rita Meter Maid, She Said, All Together Now, I'll Follow the Sun, She's Leaving Home, and Mother Nature's Son.
Don't forget Fixing a Hole. Are you just calling out all the Paul songs? Here, There, and Everywhere was in there.
Oh, come on. Like, it's not even like, it's not even like a fun bit anymore. This does feel like one of those tired Carson ones now where it's like, he really should retire this now and just like stick to the interview bit of the show. You know, the anti-Paul bias is as present as ever.
Brutal.
I mean.
Not from my side. You realize this, right? Like, not from me. It's him. It's his list. Don't blame me.
Look, as any relationship counselor will tell you, it doesn't matter whether it's true or not. It's how you make someone feel. This is just how I'm being made to feel about this list. It's, I mean, even general Beatle dogma would dictate that this song is at the bottom of most lists, so I feel like you're being a bit of a maverick no matter what angle.
Ooh, I'm a maverick.
I've attacked this from. No, that's far too dashing. I'm not going to use another word, that's far too mean. But yeah, I'm a bit shocked that we're coming to this song this late in the game. I would have assumed that this had been done earlier. I would have thought that this would have been like, oh, this would have been done during one of those, hey, we're going to take it easy for the first episode, just me and Julia, just to get to know us two. We'll do a really, a song that no one cares about, don't worry. We're just getting the vibes, and then episode, you know, blah, 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 more proper guests all the way up to, I'm sure you'll have Dave Grohl on at some point if trajectories continue. Yeah, all I'm saying is, dude, you better have some charismatic fucking arguments for this episode because... you better blow me away with some of your opinions here. I know you'll have the facts. I know you'll have the facts down. That'll be a good part of the episode for us all. I can sit back and not talk for 10 minutes. It'll be great. But after that, woe betide you if you're not prepped. That's
right. before the flogging begins, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you just came back from a nice break. From Paul or Nothing, and you've been hitting kind of like some of the deeper stuff, the firemen, the cold cuts, things like that. You know, what's new with the podcast on your end? What are you up to over in Paul or Nothing land these days?
At the moment, I am working on Run Devil Run. That's the next big one. Going to be doing Wingspan soon as well. Basically all the stuff surrounding the Driving Rain album, and then I can get all that out of the way and maybe cover two main albums within the span of a year. It's unheard of here at Paul or Nothing. I mean, to think that the very first episodes were like episode one, McCartney, episode two, Ram. It's like unheard of now. if it was done the same, it would be episode one, McCartney, and then two gig review episodes, some cold cuts, a live, you know, anything at all to actually not focus on the main format of the show. And it has been getting worse. It has been getting worse. I do say to myself every year, I'm going to focus. I'm really going to strip it down, strip it back. You know, really get to the core of the show. And then I'll be like, oh, actually, let's just spend a week talking about McCartney's paintings. That is not part of the chronology at all.
Please don't do that. Yeah.
No, I've got the big book of paintings. That is definitely an episode. I've started an episode on that, and it's just going to be me pontificating wankery for about an hour as I try and talk about art. Part of the reason I had a break was I'm glad I've got a different podcast to talk about it on, actually. Was the Paul McCartney Eyes of the Storm 1964.
Mm-hmm.
That photography book was a white whale for me. It was a thorn in your paw. Yeah. And I could not get that episode written. It was just so unreviewable for me. I couldn't find an angle by which I could actually make it an interesting episode for the listener. Mm-hmm. And you can't just go, actually, I think it's really boring. Thank you for the download. Goodbye. you want to make it something decent. And I think I'm just going to ambush someone with it one day and try and get them to help me get through it. But that episode was really dull for me. And it sapped my creative energy, if I had any at all. Yeah.
Did you find that you found the book boring? Did it not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, photography books have never wowed me. Mm-hmm. I like them for what they are. Like, I love them to go like, oh, look at the pretty picture. And then that's about it. It's very surface level for me.
Yeah.
If I'm taking a photograph, I'll be like, yeah, the composition and the depth of field and the focus and the lighting, you know, it's all very interesting. And then the moment it's put into a book and someone else is doing it, I completely lose interest. And I mean, it was bought with funds from Patreon. And so that alone means I really haven't paid for it. And if I think about it in terms of, would I have actually bought this book with my own money, my own hard-earned cash? Would I have worked 4 hours of minimum wage to buy this book?
Right.
Spoiler alert for anyone who might listen to that episode. Probably not, no. And it doesn't make for the most entertaining content. And so there was a domino effect.
Yeah.
And then fortunately, my friend Tom just randomly had an enthusiasm for doing the Fireman episode. So I was like, right, cool. I'm going to write some notes for those songs. I'm going to do all the prep and the context and the background and stuff, as I'm sure you've done for this episode. And that kind of inspired me to get back into it, and I've been enjoying it ever since, really.
Nice.
Got lots planned for the future.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, so you're not allowed to say, this was boring. Thank you for the downloads. Yeah. Goodbye.
Sorry, Julia.
I have bad news for our listeners today.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
Disagree.
Very brief notes.
Something I always like to do whenever I'm doing an article and it's a listicle, and let's say there's like 27 things I have to do, one of them will always be a one-liner. As a joke, and it would be a joke one liner, but it's also reducing the amount of work one might have to do as well by 1/27th as well. Nice little tip for anyone there.
Yeah,
well done.
Yeah.
Well, welcome.
Be pithy. It's quicker.
Well, I'm glad you're back in the saddle, so to speak. It's been quiet on the Beetle Pod front without you this summer. I miss the episode.
Well, you've got to leave them wanting. You've got to leave them wanting.
That's the goal. And
I came back with a different look. It's very
Hollywood. Right. And one day I look forward to being on it in 2032 when you get to new in 9 years, whenever that happens.
Yes. No. That one's still locked in. That's still locked in 100%.
Just no timetable. I'll be 65.
The album will literally be called Old by that point.
We'll be reviewing the new deluxe 20th anniversary edition.
Yeah. People aren't exactly rushing to do Memory Almost Full with me. I might have to press gang someone into doing
that
episode.
I kind of love that album, though. I would talk about that record if nobody wants to.
Oh, well, you can move yourself up in
the
queue.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could just get Julia and have her do it.
I hate you.
I'm not available. It's just you.
The episodes are 3 hours long, and they are intense.
Yeah.
And I go off on wild tangents you have to keep up. It's not a fun experience for anyone.
So your boy is going back on tour right now. Paul's back on the road. Is this surprising to you? Did you think he was wrapping it up after Glastonbury last year?
I mean, people said he was too old to do it in his 30s during the Wings Over America tour. So,
yeah.
although I do like that quote that he said there. It's like, man, if I was Paul McCartney, I'd buy the road. I wouldn't be on the road. it's great. It gives me hope that maybe he will extend the tour and come to Europe and maybe even come to the UK, and I will be able to press gang another person into doing something else about Paul McCartney with me. Annoyingly, I don't have a second friend who would want to do so. So it'd probably have to be the same friend again. And it's like, ooh, I'd probably have to buy his ticket to get him to do it. Right. You know what I mean? And transport and food and drink. It would be a bad bargain on my end.
Probably.
But in terms of excitement towards individual performances, I mean, I've heard the rest of this tour. It's not, none of it's going to sound better than it did at Glastonbury.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the set's going to change at all, unless Paul thinks that maybe the Glastonbury set has had so much exposure that he does have to change something up. So if that happens, that'll be fun, but I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah,
this is just more of what we've seen before.
Sure, sure. Are you, in fact, holding your breath for Now and Then? What are your thoughts on what's coming for that?
I think it's a government psyop and it doesn't exist. This is distracting us from the Hunter Biden thing. People, you need to read alternate news, everyone. I've been told by people that it's true. It's annoying how little we know about this song and how little information has been put out. I mean, Ringo has said it should have been put out already, so why hasn't it come out? Is it like the McCartney 3 situation where there's an issue with physical pressing? Is there some issue about like transferring it into different formats? Like, you know, maybe AI struggles to be on 8-track, but AI sounds good on CD, but bad on MP3. I mean, it could be something to do with that. I don't know. I feel like the hype's kind of died down for me now a little. Mm. I think it's been too late. Maybe they need to release something. You know, like when Get Back was delayed, but like Peter Jackson did that like 20-minute trailer. And it was basically going, all right, everyone, calm down. It's still going to be fucking awesome. Don't worry. and we were like, okay, awesome. Actually, we are still hyped for this. After a few announcements and nothing really official from anyone outside of like interviews for random sources, it's hard to keep excited for it. It's gonna be all right. It's gonna be fine, everyone. It's just gonna be the song we, you know, most deep cut fans have heard demos of before anyway. We can kind of probably guess where it's going. I mean, if Penn Jillette liked it, then I'm probably gonna
then
like
I'm
it.
In. He's a huge Monkees fan.
It was an amazing song, Sam. It was an amazing song. And then, like, they ask Teller, and he's just silent.
Teller's just quiet.
Like, you know,
That's a really good Penn Jillette impression, by the way.
Really just got to shout. But like, I've got to do it away from the mic because I have to be a listener. But it's very close to an Alex Jones, though. It's very close.
Yikes!
They're very opposite ends of the spectrum, though, in terms of
they really are that kind of stuff. Actually,
yeah,
it's either don't get a vax or get vaccinated.
Yeah, By the way, they're just having aneurysms all over the place.
Well, it'd be great if Alex Jones had a silent mime partner as well.
Just a guy sitting there with
skinny guy next to him. Like,
just wearing the tinfoil hat and just looking confused all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What else is there? Paul's got a new podcast as well.
Yeah. How have you been digging that?
Well, I mean, now that he's one of us, I'd like to think he might start guesting on our on our shows more.
It's a crossover episode. You know?
Yeah, man, I really want to go on that ranking the Beatles. I want to ask Jonathan about his fucking awful rankings and why he hates me. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. I mean, it is annoying that they're calling it a podcast and not an audio book, because it is basically just a kind of expanded talky version of the book that came out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying it for what it is. Of course, I'm going to make content out of his content and do a podcast about his podcast. Yep. Ouroboros, the snake that consumes itself. all very exciting stuff. But
you should actually take clips from his podcast and make it like you're in a conversation and just pretend like he's on your podcast.
That'd be really good.
What, like those Weird Al in interviews where he'd like cut it and make people say funny things? Yeah. I do remember that, actually. I think Weird Al did one with Paul, actually.
I can see that.
Play the clip. Yeah.
Well, I think we're caught up, man. You want to get into the meat of it? I can feel like you're like chomping at the bit.
He's ready
to rip me apart here.
He's doing like a little Rocky.
And you're probably not the only one. I feel like a lot of people are going to write in with really salty responses to this episode.
Oh, boy.
I can't wait. Friends, coming in this week at number 104 is You Know My Name. Look up the number.
Just...
You can take that again. I'm leaving it in.
Totally leaving
guffawing
that.
Guffawing.
The guffaws make it better. All right, here we go.
I'm switching to the booze now, baby. I'm switching to the booze now.
Attaboy. Once the Beatles set to work on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, they were firmly entrenched as a full-on recording-only unit. Their only focus was recording and writing music for recording, with zero regard to whether or not the music would be presented live. Now, John and Paul were spending a lot of time together as collaborators during this session, with John often staying at Paul's Cavendish Avenue house after sessions instead of taking the long journey back to his home in Weybridge. While waiting around the house one day for Paul, John noticed a copy of the London phone book sitting near the piano, and on the front of the book was the phrase, "You have their name, look up their number." Thus, as is so often the case in Beatles songwriting, a song idea was born. Now, John originally conceived the song to be mantra-like in its repetition, with what he explained would be a, quote, four tops kind of groove to it. But by the time he brought it to the band on May 17th, it seems the plans had changed. Now, the band had just spent months recording their magnum opus, and though the album was complete and set to be released in just a week, they were still in the studio working on new ideas, blowing off steam just by creating. Jeff Emerick would call their attitude during this time, quote, unfocused. Now, that said, on May 17th, with George Martin away on a post-Pepper holiday, and of course when the cat's away, the mice will play, the band set to work recording the first section of this song with John on piano, George and Paul on guitar, Ringo on drums. They returned to the song, with George Martin back at the helm on June 7th, recording additional sections of it, and also overdubbing different effects and sounds that strayed drastically from the song, so much to the point where the tape box for these sessions was changed to, quote, instrumental unidentified. The following evening brought additional work to the song. Further overdubs. The following evening brought additional work to the song. Further overdubs of drums, piano, guitar, vibraphone, a bird whistle, bongos, random toys from the EMI closets, and a saxophone solo by none other than Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones. So from here, the song sits in the vaults incomplete until April 30th of 1969. In spite of any personal or business issues between the two, John and Paul pulled the song out and spent the day recording all their vocals, grunts, harumphs, as well as the dulcet tones of Mal Evans shoveling gravel with a spade. The song was then put back into the EMI vaults until November of 69. Now, by this time, John had announced to the others that he was planning to leave the band. Under the moniker of the Plastic Ono Band, he'd already released Give Peace a Chance in July, followed by Cold Turkey in October. He decided he wanted to release You Know My Name as a Plastic Ono Band single, with the B-side, the also unreleased What's the New Mary Jane, which you'll recall we have ranked at 201. He even went so far as to have Apple send out a press release announcing this new single, complete with an Apple catalog number, stating that the song featured John and Yoko backed by, quote, many of the greatest show business names of the day. A mix was prepared for release in late November, but at the last minute, the plan was scrapped and the single was canceled for reasons unconfirmed. Now, a few months later, EMI was preparing to release Let It Be as a single, and with Paul checked out and working on his own solo debut, John convinced the label to release You Know My Name, Look Up the Number as the B-side of the single. The single was released March 6th of 1970, with the A-side a worldwide smash hit, and You Know My Name, Look Up the Number did not chart anywhere. It was never performed by any of the members live, obviously, and the song was released in an extended form on Anthology 2, featuring sections that had been edited from the initial release, but not still a complete full version of the track. So, why is You Know My Name, Look Up the Number at 104? Okay. So, like we were saying earlier, this is probably one of the more obscure tracks in the official Beatles canon. So, if you've never heard the full thing, press pause, go listen to the song. Pull up Past Masters, it's the last track on there. Then, if you're feeling frisky, pull up Anthology 2, listen to the extended version for more fun. But we're going to talk mainly about the regular version. So, go ahead and we'll resume here when you get back. All right, here we go. Now you're back. Now, how can you listen to this song and not smile and laugh and giggle the whole time? To me, this song is the heart of the bromance of Lennon and McCartney and the Beatles as a whole unit. You know, for all the talk about their amazingly intense relationships, the in talk, the jokes that no one else understands, this is a look at two people who are so entwined in each other's brain and their psyche, their sense of humor. How can you not kind of love this? It's absolutely, completely absurd, but that's wonderful about it. I've mentioned this before, but in 1967, you know, Ringo arguably had the best drum sounds then that he's ever gotten. The first section here is one of like the tastiest, gnarliest grooves he's ever laid down. And it's so simple, but it just sounds so fat and it's behind the beat. And it just automatically makes you want to do like the stank face that I do so well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could listen to that section alone just on a loop for 20 minutes. It's just so cool. And apparently there was a 20-minute take of this section, which I would like to petition Apple to please give us that at some point. and then, my God, maybe one of the most ferocious vocals Lennon and McCartney ever put down as a pair. Now, there's a lot of talk about John's voice after the touring years, particularly in the late 60s. It was thinner. It was a bit weaker at times than it was during the heavy touring days. But not here. And Paul's voice is just monstrous. Like the way that they hit it is amazing. They do this thing in harmony where they basically shout together in harmony, which is really hard to scream and harmonize with somebody at the same time. But they do it and they sound really, really great here. So then it moves to the lounge section, which that groove that Ringo plays here is a really tricky groove. But as always, it's no problem for Ringo. Paul's lounge crooner is smooth and smarmy. John's got kind of the loud MC who's probably had a few too many martinis. Then we get to this like bizarre Python-esque section that's just so incredibly goofy and silly. And John and Paul do these like weird, almost old lady type voices. And mind you, these two, legend would have you believe at this point, hate each other. Or at the very least are not getting along at all. But somehow they're able to do this goofy shit. So I don't know. Then we take it home with this kind of jazzy piano section with John sounding like a Disney cartoon character out of the Jungle Book. And Paul just sounds like he's constipated. And it's absolute insanity from the two most famous songwriters on the planet. And then whatever dreams you might have had of like a Beatles and Stones collaboration in the 60s coalesce into this like honking, extremely mediocre saxophone solo from Brian Jones. None of this track makes any sense at all. Like, none of this should actually be a thing, but neither should really anything that's happened in this band's career. They shouldn't have made it out of Liverpool. They weren't even the best band in Liverpool for years. They should have just been a flash in the pan for a year or two and then off to own hair salons or ghostwrite bubblegum songs for other flashes in the pan. But every step of the way, they stay absolutely true to themselves as people and as creatives and to the music they love and the humor they love and the muses they chase. And this is kind of the epitome of that for me. This track is the same humor, I think, that we all love in A Hard Day's Night and Help. It's the same druggy charm we all love in Magical Mystery Tour. But because it exists in the record world instead of in the film world, it kind of gets passed off. I think that's kind of a shame. I think this may be one of the most unappreciated songs in their whole catalog. And at the end of the day, even Paul McCartney in 1998 told Mark Lewisohn that this was one of his favorite Beatles songs. So none of you can argue with me on this. It's official. Let it be so. And it is written on this day.
Wow. Wow. This is like a very strong statement, because usually every other episode you're like, these are just my opinions. I'm totally wrong. Like, your songs are probably very different. And this one you're like, it is law.
Let it be written.
What is going on? Like, you really song, feel this strongly.
I think the song slays. That's why I have it at 104. I think this is a really cool fucking song.
This is the fucking hill you're dying on.
Yep. Yep.
This is the hill you're dying on.
Yes, it is.
Sam.
I love this song. I do not care. I adore this song.
Give it more to
than
him, Sam.
Half the more than half the rest of the catalog. I love this. I love this song so much.
Sam is like sharply inhaling, like preparing to verbally slay Jonathan. It's going to be great.
This song is the poster child for a song that is far more interesting to research and talk about than it is to like listen to. This is a complete curio. This is a cold cut, a bonus track, an unreleased track that was somehow actually released. It somehow actually ended up being risen from the dead. You know, this is like, what if you didn't want Lazarus to come back? It's like, oh no. Okay, like, it's cool that he came back, but actually he wasn't all that special to begin with. Like, thanks Jesus. You know, it's always been one of those songs that I feel myself wanting to like more. Like, I want to like it because it's an obscurity. I want to like it because it's relatively unpopular, and I want to like it because it's got that, you know, pedigree of like, oh, you know, the Goons and Monty Python. And yet, with all that desire, I can't actually bring myself to say that it's a good piece of music. there's a cutoff point where it stops being interesting to me, and it's quite a definite one. We'll get to that shortly. But, yeah, not too impressed with this one. Never have been. I think, like a lot of people, my experience with this one was, you know, you're either going through on streaming or you're collecting the vinyl. You've bought a bunch of cheap 45s and then you've bought Let It Be. And you're like, oh, you know, I wonder what could be on the other side of this. Oh, you know my name. Look at the number. And you're like, okay, I've never heard of this. You've never heard this in a movie or on TV. You've never heard it be referenced anywhere before. There's no pop culture, you know, zeitgeist reference for it at all. And you put it on, and within about 30 seconds, you're either going to lift that needle and never listen to it again, or you're going to be like Jonathan, and you're going to think it's the best thing since sliced bread. Yeah, the greatest Beatles song ever written, better than Hey Jude.
This his smokes two line. Of think, us.
If you wind the tape back, he said it's the greatest Beatles song ever. I think you'll find. yeah, I like talking about this one. I like hearing you talk about this one. I think it's very interesting. But I mean, what was quite a giveaway for me was whenever I do this show or another podcast or in my own show, and there's a particular song to research, it immediately enters my Spotify most played list because I just can't get enough of the track. I'm over listening to it. I'm overkilling it. I haven't had that today at all.
Interesting.
This is not one that is ever going to be anything other than like a factoid that I'm going to talk about.
That's interesting because
I don't see it. It's not part of the canon. I'm going to say it right now. It's not really a part of my canon.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Now
this belongs with side two of Yellow Submarine.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Now this is interesting to me though because you talk a lot about, especially on some of like the Hot Hits and Cold Cuts episodes that you do, but tracks around like the McCartney 2 era, like say Blue Sway.
Don't use my own podcast against
me. I'm throwing it back at you. Like you were talking in this episode that you have out right now about Blue Sway, which is like just as hyper repetitive as this one, and maybe doesn't progress as much as this one. But you're like, I love this song. This song's really cool.
Oh.
I resent the impression.
I think Blue Sway is a fantastic song. It sounds like Sean Connery. Yeah, I don't know where that came from. Sorry.
Yes. Miss Moneypenny, I love the McCartney tear session. Look, the moment we get to the goon part of this song, I just can't help but feel that it just stops being an interesting piece of music. I just cannot engage with it on any level. I mean, part of me knows that I'm just annoyed that I'm tone deaf and the only part of the song I can accurately replicate is the you know, all of that. That's all I can do. You know my number one, you know me number two. Like, so I can do all of that fine. That's my life, but like, you know, I wanna be doing you know one, you know, I wanna be doing that in perfect key. That's not going to happen. So there is a bit of resentment there, but the moment we get to this part of the song, I feel like it's that kind of, it's ironic that it's paired with What's the New Mary Jane, really, because it reminds me of that kind of Lennon hostility towards the audience, where he's almost trying to push how uncommercial and how amusical he can be.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are gonna love that. Conceptually, I love that, but it doesn't, it's going to necessarily be an engaging piece of music. I'm not surprised by it. I'm not shocked. You know, it is the natural conclusion of what happens if you teach the Beatles how to make Yellow Submarine the song, and how to make Sergeant Pepper, and then you put them in the middle of the Magical Mystery Tour sessions, and you leave them unsupervised for a few days. Then of course you're going to get this, but. To me, it reminds me more of those really awful McCartney cold cuts, like, say, Bogey Music, where, it's Bogey Wobble is the cold cut. Bogey Music is the track that ended up on McCartney 2 sampling. But there are certain tracks that Paul just needs to record to get out of his system, to kind of exercise the demon, as it were, so he can focus on writing Coming Up and Temporary Secretary and all of the decent stuff. And I feel like, you know, they did that well here. They got it out of their system and they didn't have to release it. It should have appeared on Anthology. You know, that's when we should have first learned about it, or it should have been bootlegged at least. But no, it's actually an official part of the discography for some reason.
It's probably because everybody's checked out at that point and no one really cares, and John's just going to be kind of a dick about it. But that's also a big part of the story, though. Filler. Like, yeah, it's total filler. But that's also part of the story. Like, how much of the early stuff is filler? When you look at like your Please Please Me, or you're with the Beatles.
Touché, sir.
Like, are they really, you know, dying hard for Devil in Her Heart?
Well, the problem is when you've set up in the second half of your career this consistent high quality product, and then all of a sudden at the final hurdle to kind of just go, fuck it, this'll do, like a husband at a garage forecourt at his 15th wedding anniversary night, you know, a few pansies and a card with a bent corner on it, that'll do kind of attitude. I really wish that the Beatles ended a bit more on a higher note. I love me some B-sides. You've heard the episode, John. Mm. I love my B-sides a lot of the time more than the A-sides. And this, to me, screams B-side material. And part of me thinks, like, okay, should I approach this as if this was like a Chuck Berry B-side from 1959 or something? And it's like, oh no, it's completely throwaway. It is complete trash. It should not be taken seriously at all. Then, yeah, maybe I could meet it halfway on that level. But even then, it's like, couldn't we have just had one of the hundreds and hundreds of other songs recorded during the Let It Be sessions? Like, yeah. The material was there. It's not like there was a dearth of material. Maybe put Not Guilty on the B-side, Dick. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, yeah. I mean, I like the first two parts. The first part should have just been expanded into a full-on proper song. I don't think that's too controversial a statement.
Sure.
Just that setup. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Like, the bass is absolutely incredible, and the song suffers from losing that bass from that point onwards. And you are totally right. Paul's shrieking vocal is it like the most powerful, loud thing in the entire Beatles discography? And the only reason it isn't louder, like, it's only because it's mixed way over here.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, you don't have to fully suffer it, but you know that there's some master recording of that somewhere, and you know Mal Evans is just like, ow, oh my bloody ear. And there is nothing like that in the Beatles discography, and that little moment of just, you know, that little bit is incredibly enlivening. And there is about 30 seconds of pure Beatles magic on this track for me. You know, that classic magic that makes those certain songs as good as they are in the mind's third eye. And after that, you get the second bit, which, you know, as a McCartney head, it's a fun segment to see Paul dominate. You know, it's a segment that relies almost entirely on his charm and his charisma and his showmanship. You know, like, it's him being a character that he can so easily just jump into. Like, he's seen a thousand of these people at, like, Butlins and in Liverpool. He's seen his dad at the piano, and he's just putting all of that to great effect. And I wish the song kind of stayed in this mode where it's slightly comedic, but it's still focusing on the music, you know, like, there's a, you know, it's dipping a toe into silly, but, like, you know, it's still somewhat focused, and we haven't completely lost it here. It's also quite sexy, this part of the song. I don't know what it is. I'm like, I feel like, you know, I felt like Lola in the Copacabana, and Rico's like looking at me from across the world. Just a bit like, you know, who shot who? I don't know. And then we get to that third bit, and I just check out. I mean, do you really find it funny, John, that this song? Are you laughing like an episode of 30 Rock?
Oh, you know, different, like, kinds of
laugh.
Different kinds of funny. Like, it's,
oh, so it's like Lenny Bruce, where you just sit there,
it's
going,
not like,
I appreciate,
like,
that,
you know, like knee slapping, elbow slapping, I appreciate giggles, that humor, laughing. But it's also, like, funny in the same way that I find parts of Help funny, or parts of A Hard Day's Night. Like, is Who's That Little Old Man all that funny? Not really, but, like, I still am totally charmed by it, and I think it's funny.
Okay, I'm going to cut in here, because as part of my notes, I have that I get why you find this funny. So
do tell.
I'm going to give y'all a little bit of backstory on Jonathan. So his best friend, and actually you talked about him today, Steven, who has been on a previous episode, has been your friend since probably 2001, maybe?
Yeah.
So 22 years now. You went to college together. You're very close. You've been in numerous bands together. You're still currently in a band together. So you spend a lot of time together. I know, it's very cute. But through being such close friends, you two have this weird way of communicating that no one else understands. Like, it's full of, like, you can grunt at each other in, like, specific intonations, and you know exactly what the other one means. Like, it is, and this is very specifically you and Steven's humor. Like you all do like little like Metallica impressions and you're like, "Meme boy, yeah." And then see, and he starts laughing because it's so funny to them. And like what it like what are the like just these weird like little grunt things, and it's been a joke for so long that like you just eventually, if you're sort of new to the unity of Jonathan and Steven, like you catch on. And it just, they've been laughing about the joke literally for 21 years. They've been making the same joke, and they still laugh every time. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, they quote, like, the early internet, what are those?
The G.I. Joe videos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The early 2000s G.I. Joe videos.
And then what was the
other You're the man now, dog.
Oh, God, dude. I love you're the man now, dog.com.
Obsessed. Oh, God. Obsessed.
Can we make this podcast about early 2000s internet instead? Oh, God.
And then what was the other one with the squirrel?
Wee!
Yeah, like, I mean, just and they'll just go like, wee! And then they both start laughing. So, like, this song is very, falls very specifically in line with you and Steven's humor, which it is also like John and Paul's humor. I think that you identify with it on that level of having your sort of longtime friend and musical partner. Mm-hmm. And you have this like really stupid sense of humor that the two of you get. And you can just get in there. Like literally, if you and Steven had a bowl of gummies and unlimited, unsupervised studio time, you would literally do the same thing. Like I would not put any of that past
you. Do you mean like a bowl of like weed gummies or sour worms? Because
you would have two bowls. Sack. You would have one bowl of weed gummies and one bowl of Trolley sour worms because that's what they consume in the studio. And you would just make something exactly gummies, like this. Jesus. Like you would just, you would do it to make yourselves laugh and you wouldn't care if anyone else understood it or got it or thought it was funny or anything. You would just, and you would be laughing the whole time.
Right. And I think that is what makes this one of the most quintessential Beatle tracks because, Samuel, you're about to explode. Because I think one of the biggest reasons for their success is that they stayed completely true to who they were. I think they wrote what they wanted to. They recorded what they wanted to. They certainly, you know, from the word go, you know, told George Martin, "We're not putting out this cheesy little song that you think is a hit. We believe in the stuff that we do, and we want to do the stuff that we want to do." And they were right. And this is a natural extension of that. Of like, this is something that tickled an itch for them, and they got some kind of creative buzz from it. So much so that they worked on it for, you know, within the stretch of 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I think that puts this on a very essential playing field.
Sam, thoughts?
Those sentiments are fine for Christmas cards, I guess.
You know, hurt you, so Sam. Hurt you.
I mean, you know,
for Christmas.
I hate to tell you about the record business here, Sammy, but, you know, oh, we'd do this if we were in the studio. Yeah, but would you release it on record though? Mm. But would you release it on record? But would you release it on record?
Well, I think this is the difference. I think Paul on his own would not, at least in the context and times of the Beatles. I think John was much more up for that, which is why he was doing stuff like your Revolution 9, West of New Mary Jane.
John never self-sabotaged once in his career then.
Never, yeah, ever. Okay. I think he was more willing to, I think his filter was lower. Like he was more willing to put that stuff out there as that extension. And Paul is a bit smarter and more business-minded and more likely to go, well, this doesn't really fit in line with what we do. And there is, you know, pros and cons to both sides of that.
You know what it is? You know what it is? It's the fact that it wasn't vetoed by either George or Ringo either. So clearly all four of them liked this song enough to, at least in those final days, you know, there's that footage of George going, here's me signing more papers and I don't know what they mean. You know, that's probably George signing the release for You Know My Name, Look Up the Number. That's how it actually got released. Because surely, I mean, I get that John would sign off on this. I get that maybe like one of them would be like, yeah, let's just get something out there. But I do just find it odd that it made it past the final post, I guess. You know, they were right to record this without George Martin. George Martin, the man who rightfully shot down the worst of McCartney's mad ramblings before the tug of war sessions. I feel like it's a very George Martin-less decision. Obviously, Phil Spector's on the scene at this point, or at least in, George Martin is slightly out of the scene at this point, I guess would be the best way to put it. I want to be nicer to this song. I really do.
You can.
It has brought me joy. It has brought me joy before, but if I'm putting it on a ranking list, like if I'm going to buy your poster on your little store or whatever, go and check it out. I'm not ready for it.
Rankingthebeatles.com.
www.rankingthebeatles.com. You know, it would be instinctively going low. I can't help but feel that this is all a ruse for views. You know, this is you coaxing an audience here. You're stoking us, and it's like when you're going through a really baity meme reel on like Instagram or something or on YouTube, and people are commenting like, "Hang on, that fact is wrong that he just said." No, don't comment. Now you're going to boost it in the algorithm. And I feel like everything I'm saying right now is just getting you more downloads and getting you closer to Dave Grohl. You know,
what if this is Dave Grohl's favorite Beatles song?
Sam just called you an internet troll.
Probably not the first in the
There's no way back from hell, John.
I've been accused of being a troll on this podcast several times, so it is not true. I am not trolling. Julia, what do you think, my dear?
This is a thing that the Beatles recorded.
I love those answers.
Go for it, Julia. Let it go. Let it go.
I think it's the verse, like the very first section where there's vocals.
Yeah.
I feel like the vocal kind of sounds like Mick Jagger. Is that weird of me? I don't. There's
no,
like
he's
some
doing
sort
kind
of
like
of
a gravelly.
I did go in the studio that day. They never credited me on the song, though.
He's just dancing around in the background, doing the...
Like, for some reason,
he's like, I'm always...
Sounds like Mick Jagger.
He moves like a velociraptor, though. You know what I mean? I'm like...
Clever.
I'll strike you with my claws. Yeah. Oh, you're nasty. I'm nasty. I'm really nasty.
There's got to be a Rolling Stones song that says, "I'll strike you with my claws." There's got to be one. If it's not, it's on this new album that's coming out.
It's the song Paul was on. You know?
Yeah, the punk song. Yeah.
I don't really have a lot to say.
Yeah.
I get why you enjoy it. Like, I just gave my whole spiel, like, that was part of my notes, and that seemed like the appropriate time to say it. Like, I get why you enjoy it, but it doesn't really resonate with me. I'm like, oh, okay, they did like a kind of silly thing, like they were just having a good time in the studio. Does that warrant it being put on record? I don't really think so. I'm glad they were having fun. Good job on doing a fun thing and making yourselves laugh. I've heard it. I'm like, I could not hear it again and be fine about it. I don't know. I'm very ambivalent about it. I'm just like, it's a thing that they recorded. Like, I don't I don't hate it. I'm not like, oh, this makes me angry. Nor am I like, oh, this is amazing. I'm just like, eh.
Okay.
Zero feelings.
Interesting. Man, I feel like I've been sold out by everybody here.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
And that quote by Paul McCartney has to be a joke when he said it was his favorite song.
I disagree.
That's fucking ridiculous. It's disagree. Mental. I'm sorry. No, that is insane. If I ever meet him, I will just tackle him to the ground. I'll fight my way through security.
I don't know that that's going to work out for you, buddy.
I'll be imbued with a strength unseen in me. I'll storm my way through. But
he said this in 88. So it's 8 years after John's been shot.
He would have said anything. He would have said anything at this point, John. He would have said anything at this
point.
Do
you think?
He was a desperate man. He was anything. Please just like me.
Please, oh, anybody. Please.
Just buy my albums, please.
But no, I think, this song probably really reminds him of, those friendship memories. More than anything of John, as opposed to the creative partnership, writing together, cranking out, classic songs. Like, this is them just having fun and being, the idiot schoolboys that they were when they met.
Well, then, okay. As long as no one gets that confused for that's Paul McCartney saying it's the best song they ever did. Let's just
he's saying it's as, he's not saying it's the best. It's not it's the best. It was he said it was his favorite at the time. But now he says here, there, and everywhere.
Mm. Because John said he liked it. Because his boyfriend said he liked it. also, speaking of Paul's ex, well, actually, first of all, sorry if this is a really ageist question, but have either of you two ever used a telephone directory? Sorry.
Yes. We still got them in the mail up until maybe 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
You get a new one every year and throw it right in the recycling bin.
I was like, why are you sending this?
Never.
No?
You never used a phone book? One. Are you that young? Are that young. Yeah. Ooh.
That's wild.
Yikes. Yeah, I mean, I remember getting the...
Still had catalogs delivered to the house. I'm still in that age bracket, yeah. Ooh, the lawnmower section. I've still had that in my life.
Your Christmas wish list in the catalog?
Oh, yeah. It would shift from the plastic kids tut section, and then it would start slowly shifting towards... PlayStations and stuff like that, and
right.
stuff earlier in the catalog, much to my parents' sadness. No, the reason I bring up the phone book is, am I the only one who's getting a little tired of John's, oh, I just read something and then I made a song about it, shtick, being for the benefit of Mr. Kai. Oh, yep. I saw it on a poster. Happiness is a warm gun. I saw it on a magazine. It's like, it's a good thing there's not just a Beatles song called Playboy, Get Your Knockers Out, Love. You know what I mean?
It should have been the B-side to Let It Be.
Hey, John, maybe think about something. Maybe just think for 5 fucking minutes about a song. Maybe think, John. When you're on smack, I guess.
That
creative.
Paul named his album "Memory Almost Full" because it showed up on his phone because it was out of memory. Let's not.
When the thing I like does it, it's good. that's my answer to that.
Literally wrote a song and named after comic book characters.
It also brings up anxieties in me because, like, I walk past magazine headlines all the time, and I don't like come up with amazing songs.
I'm waiting for your debut single, Trump Suit Again.
Yeah,
ripped straight from the headlines.
No, I think it's going to be called Playboys Get Your Knockers Out. That's going to be my first. Yeah.
Can I play drums on it?
It's definitely going to be in a music hall style.
Oh, it's got to be granny
100%.
Shit.
100%. I mean, there's no modern version of this song, is there? It's just, add me on Facebook. There's not even a second.
You could almost argue that, like, the second half of it's the last two Arctic Monkeys albums. Very, like, sleazy lounge singer type thing. But, yeah, no one does, like, weird offbeat quasi-comedy songs anymore. Which I feel like you would get stuff like that as, like, hidden tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the days of CDs.
Yeah.
When, like, Dookie finished and then you got I Was Alone. Mm. I Was All By Myself. No One Was Looking.
Yeah, or, like, you get a lot of skits on, yeah, on hip-hop records. Albums, yeah.
Which, like, and the skits are almost never funny.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember Sum 41 randomly did, like, a hair metal song for a laugh. So, like, a minute long in between two songs as like, a link track.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, this is not up there with Hello, Mudder, Hello, Fader by Alan Sherman. This isn't up there with My Dingaling. This isn't up there with The Streak by Ray Stevens.
Is it better than Disco Steve, Duck?
Weird Al. Very few things are better than disco. I mean, The Laughing Gnome, The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins by Spock.
You know. Leonard Nimoy.
No, his name is Spock. I believe he's credited as Spock, trademark C-T-T-M.
Classical version is S-P-A-C-H. Wah, wah.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
I mean...
What?
Like, if you actually look at any of those other examples, they are they are still enjoyable as pieces of music. Like, you know, you can still whistle, you know, and it's not just and like that's fine if they'd committed to that mantra thing that John was talking about earlier on, maybe they could have done something interesting with it. But the only thing that is really impressive with the song for me is how well they do each of it. Like, you know, they do commit to all four of these shticky things. You know, they go all the way from the rock bit at the start, the lounge lizard bit, the goons bit, and then the kind of easy listening Acca Bilk closer.
Mm-hmm.
They do each bit incredibly well, but, you know, the Beatles were too concerned about whether or not they could. They didn't stop to think if they should.
Oh, yeah. You just Goldblumed it on the podcast. Oh, shit.
And now you've recorded it, mixed it, you've slapped it on a 45, and now you're selling it. You're selling it.
Oh, God. Now I got to watch Jurassic Park again.
Let's go do that.
All right. So at 104 for You Know My Name, look
Chaos
up the number.
Theory and Chaos Theory and Creation in the Backyard. Sorry, I had to get that in there. So
well, hold on to your butts. Are we just throwing out Jurassic Park quotes now?
Yeah.
At 104, too high, way off base. What are we thinking? I feel like I know the answer to this question.
Do you really have to ask us?
As Stevie Wonder said. Too high. Yeah.
Is this bottom barrel? Like, how would this compare? You know, if you look back at the bottom of the list, mm-hmm. we've got Sie Lieb Dich, Komm Gib Mir Dein Hand, and Mr. Moonlight are your bottom three.
Mm.
Well, you've just done another one that shouldn't even be on the list as well. That isn't part of my canon either.
Which one?
A German version of a regular song. That's right?
Like, what
song.
A nerd. Yeah. Okay, so is it, yeah. What do you prefer? This one or Mr. Moonlight?
This one.
Yeah. Okay, so better than Mr. Moonlight. But,
yeah.
This one is one.
Hmm. Yeah, I was thinking, yeah. This one.
Would you rather this one or What's the New Mary Jane?
Okay, we're still going higher. We're still going higher. Keep going.
12 bar original.
Yeah, it's better than that. Better than that.
Back in the USSR?
Again. Oh, my. What? That's the next one. Is that,
No. We're jumping around.
Oh.
Why don't we do it in the road?
What? No, it's not better than Why Don't We Do It in the Road.
Don't Pass Me By.
Yes, it's better than Don't Pass Me By.
Okay.
So,
okay.
So it should be there. It's right there.
Is
it's
it
right
better
there.
Than...
Yeah, back in the USSR is back there. You already passed it.
That's at 194. Why don't we do it in the roads at 193? Don't Pass Me By was 186. How do you think this compares to Maxwell Silver Hammer at 179?
It's worse than Maxwell Silver Hammer.
Absolutely.
Disagreeing by like 75 episodes, apparently. Oh, my goodness.
There's a lot that I say is much better than this. Like, I would put
Good Day Sunshine at 138 versus...
You know my name,
look at the number at 104.
Insane. Oh my God. This is a farce. This is a... Oh my God.
Oh man. I feel like now I'm just doing this just to get a reaction out of Sam.
No, I feel like you're... Like, I'm the American military-industrial complex and you're some Middle Eastern country.
Oh,
just, God. Just trying to commit enough atrocities to make me attack you. Like, I'm like, I don't want to invade. I don't want to, but I've got all this tech, and you're making me. Okay, you've just hit one of our embassies, right? We're coming now, and we're here for the next 12 years, and we're gonna make 3 Oscar-winning movies about this.
Oh my God!
And yeah.
Oh yeah. Shit!
There's gonna be a Call of Duty game based on what's about to happen.
Yes. It's so true.
It's true. It's funny.
This is what happens when you keep me up late and I have a mocha at 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, goodness. Well, all right. Before we wrap for the evening, because it is late your time and you have to go to bed. It is a school day.
Nephew, get some rest.
That's right. Normally,
I've got the delivery tomorrow. I'm going to be fine.
Normally, we would do rapid fire, but we've done rapid fire. I want to throw some trivia questions your way. Okay. How are you feeling about trivia today?
I'm very nervous because I'm always undone by this. It's very illuminating at how pre-scripted my show is.
Well, we've got 4 questions here, starting off with the easy one for you. And these are all Paul-centric questions. What is the one day of a week? What is the one day of the week not mentioned in Lady Madonna?
Don't do that. No, he's trying to sing the song in his head. Hush.
Wednesday?
Saturday.
Saturday. Oh, God.
That one screws me up all the time live, too.
I just panicked then. I felt like a deer in the headlights. I was like, okay.
Who is Paul McCartney?
I've got to pick a direction. No, but it's like our ancestors who stood there died. So you have to just pick something and go. You got to pick a direction. The woods or the caves, go quick. And I was just like, Wednesday. Whatever.
Just do it like your Indiana Jones. Jehovah spelled with an I. This one comes courtesy of our friend Bob Schooley, who recently gave me this magazine called Trivia of the Beatles. And I pulled this out of here. What song did Paul write for the Everly Brothers?
Ooh. He's like, I don't fucking know.
Was it Real Slim Shady?
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes, you got it.
Yeah.
It was On the Wings of a Nightingale.
I haven't covered it.
I feel like there needs to be a full episode.
I feel.
On Wings of a Nightingale.
Yeah. A full episode or your content. Whole.
Hey, I just need a full episode on You Know My Name, Look at the Number, dude. Okay. All right. Another one from this book here. On what song does Paul contribute drums under the name Paul Ramone?
Oh, that's on My Darkest Hour.
Yes.
By Steve Miller.
You got it.
The Steve Miller band.
I don't know if he had if it was the band or that. I think it was just solo act, Steve Miller, at that
point. I always thought his name was Steve Miller Band.
Steve Miller Band.
No, but in England, a big part of the political dynasty with Labour like 10 years ago were the Miller Band brothers.
Oh,
so
funny.
I was just like, like maybe they're like the son of Steve Miller Band or something.
That's funny.
Yeah, he's like a down with the people kind of guy.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm glad I got one right there.
All right, you got okay. Now this is the last one. It's a big one. I think, but I feel like you can get it. If anyone's gonna get it, I think you got it. And this also proves like some real hardcore shit too. How many times has Paul McCartney been arrested? Would you like me to multiple choice this for you, or you want to just pick a number?
I'm gonna go with 3.
Are you sure?
I want to go with 3. Oh, no. Okay. I want to go with 4. Julius Fontagaia. Okay. See, I thought she was doing thumbs up. Sorry. Like, yes.
Well, actually, then I realized that. I was like, no, up.
Yeah. The correct answer.
I'm a terrible cheater. I'm
you
sorry.
You are. You're horrible. The correct answer is 6 times Johnny Law has put Paul McCartney in the handcuffs.
Johnny Law.
The long arm of the law. Aww. Has wrapped its little mugs around our Paul 6 times.
That's a lot.
That is.
What did he get arrested for in 84? That's pretty late.
Possession.
Is it all possession?
Yeah. Yeah.
Grand larceny.
Well, no, the first one in 1960, which I wrote 70 on my notes, 60, was for arson.
Oh.
He and Pete Best lit a prophylactic on
fire.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't even think about that one.
And got arrested and thrown out of Germany.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You might say they were arson about.
Well played.
I'll be here all week. Tippy waitress. Try the veal. Yeah.
And then all the rest were for possession of marijuana.
Excellent.
Yeah. So
possession of, I was going to say something else, but you can work out the... Yeah, I'm going to do that one.
But yeah, 6 times.
So, look, I didn't know what it was downloading. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
A link just came up and I clicked it.
No.
Pete Townsend just sent me an email.
No.
I was just talking.
Colon forward.
I was just talking to Pete Townsend and he said he was doing some research for a book.
No.
And,
now it's all this.
I hate this.
Yeah. Oh man. But yeah, so when people say Paul's not hardcore, he's gone to jail 6 times, man. That's hardcore.
No, he's not been to jail 6 times. He's been arrested 6 times.
That's true.
There's a
That's true.
I think he has bail money. Yeah. He's probably fine.
Yeah, probably.
You just sign a few copies of Pepper, and you know they'll slip you a file into the jail cell.
Yeah. Well, Sam, that's it, man. That's all we got for you. Thank you for making some time and spending your evening with us. It's always a pleasure to catch up. If our listeners are not listening to your lovely podcasts, where can they track it down?
Track it down.
Sure. It takes work. I know.
Across deserts and plains, forests and rivers, the harshest terrain. Or you can go onto a search engine and type in Paul Orner Think or the Paul McCartney podcast. Ignore all other Paul McCartney podcasts.
Including Paul McCartney. There you...
Yes, including Paul's own one. I don't think I'm going to appear on Paul or Nothing. I don't really like his vibe.
He was making fun of
Paul or Nothing. It's the only place you can get all of your Paul all of the time. It's my slightly, I'd like to say, acerbic and irreverent take on Paul McCartney. I'm about to do a 2 or 3-part series on Paul's 1999 rock and roll covers album, Run Devil Run. That's going to be really exciting. Can't wait to do that. But yeah, if you enjoyed my slightly weird branch of humour and you like kind of well-researched, slightly well-recorded Paul McCartney chit-chat, then come and check it out. John's weaseled his way into an episode soon, so we'll be looking forward to
2 years
recording that one soon as well. But yeah, this one's been fun. It's been nice to do a song that clearly no one else wanted to do, and I've risen to the challenge, as it were.
As you always do, though. You always do. I know you're going to deliver the goods. That's why I call you.
You can polish a turd. You really can.
Oh man, well, always a pleasure, my friend. Always good to catch up with you. And yeah, that's all we got, man.
Peace and love.
Peace and love.
No more autographs. Hare Krishna.
It's coming up after October 24th.
No, it's October 20th.
October 20th.
Yeah.
So just 3 days away is what we call International Toss Day. Because after October 20th, it will be tossed.
No more autographs.
He should do it like the Queen's speech every year. He should re-record that rant, like, word for word.
Yes.
Or like, you know, like, oh, 1 year, Fred Armisen's going to do it, you know. Just like different people come in.
Get the guy
Oh, my God. Kate McKinnon, yeah.
Does it get the guy who looks just like old Ringo? You know what I'm talking about? The guy that's Ringer Starr. Have you not heard of him?
It sounds like an exotic dancer.
Sounds like a piercing you get somewhere below the belt.
I'm done. No, I'm done. I'm out. Star. Wrap it up. That is enough, Eddie.
Sam Wiles, everybody. How about it? What a funny, funny guy. I love chatting with him, man. He always puts a smile on our face. It's so nice to get to catch up with him. He's become like our little buddy. He's a little nephew. He calls Julia and I his podcast aunt and uncle, which we're not that much older than him. Well, I mean, maybe we are, but not terribly. It's not that much. But anyway, always a pleasure to chat with him. Be sure to check out Paul or Nothing. It's an absolutely fantastic podcast. Friends, what do you all think about You Know My Name? Look up the number at 104 out of 223. Do you think I am right? Do you think I have lost my absolute marbles? Or, and she's not here for it, do you think, in the words of Baby Bear, I can't even say it when she's not here, just like Baby Bear's porridge, am I just right? Let me know in the comments wherever you listen to us. If you're looking to join in the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at Ranking the Beatles, or you can find us on Instagram at Ranking the Beatles. We're also on Twitter, still calling it Twitter, at Ranking Beatles. You can also follow along the conversation at rankingthebeatles.com, where you can pick up a Rank Your Own Beatles poster. We will be updating it to include Now and Then, so you can make your own informed decision. Or if you already have one, you might just write it in there yourself. We'll figure it out going forward. I don't know. No one expected a new song in 2023. So it's all up in the air now. But check it all out. Please let a friend know what we're doing over here if you're enjoying the show. We would love to chat with them and have them join. And feel free to leave a nice review somewhere if we're on your podcast provider of choice. If you're enjoying the show and you want to help out, a review is always the way to do that. So, friends, that's all we got for this week. Keep an eye out in the next couple days for a new episode talking about Now and Then. And we'll see you next week with another brand new episode. Until then, take care of yourselves. I'm Jonathan. This has been Ranking the Beatles. Adios, muchachos.